You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
It appears as though we're going through another crime wave as the country exits the hard lockdown. Just anecdotally, in my neighbourhood of Parkview, there was a definite spike from level 5 and level 4 to level 3 when people were allowed to go about their daily business again. And someone who has his virtual and literal eye on these things is Ricky Crook, CEO of VumaCam, which is rolling out its camera network along the Vumatel fibre footprint. And Ricky, I'm certainly a big fan of nominative determinism, but I'm glad you sided with the good guys here. Welcome to the show.
Great, thanks for having me.
Now, you're owned by CIVH, which is the parent company of Vumatel and Dark Fiber Africa, which is in turn owned by Remgrow. Just take us back to the formation of VumaCam back in 2017 and what it is that you're really setting out to achieve.
Perfect. So really what, you know, where we come from. So me personally, been involved in the security industry for the last 15 years. We used to have a security company, you know, operating in the northern suburbs. And we've always looked at, you know, innovating, you know, in terms of putting new solutions, in terms of, you know, tackling the crime waves that have taken place. So, you know, our big philosophy was to say, how do we marry technology to manpower so that, you know, you can't just carry on putting more guards on the streets and more vehicles because, you know, it costs a lot of money. So how can you get technology to identify, you know, activity so that you can allocate your resources more effectively? And what we term it as situational awareness into a central location so that you can then allocate which cars you send where. And, you know, putting that all together, we saw that through the years, technology's changed, connectivity's changed, and, you know, trying to put cameras up 12 years ago, it was really a challenge to try stream video through DigiNet and copper line. So we said we had to find a medium to stream the video to a central location, and fiber optics was really the obvious choice for us. So we went through a process around, you know, connecting up the cameras to fiber optic cables, and we laid out our first fiber optic cables 10 years ago in the suburb of Dunkeld. We put up 55 cameras into the area, and we saw with the combination of putting up cameras and the manpower and the tactical vehicles on the ground, we went from a crime a week to a crime every 6 months. So we saw a huge impact in terms of this, you know, integrated holistic solution. And then what we said is, well, actually, there's a big opportunity for fiber, and we landed up building a fiber business called Fiberhoods, and we rolled out, you know, an aerial fiber solution. And from there, we then landed up doing a deal with the Vumatel guys and said, guys, you know, you guys want to be on the fiber side. While we got into fiber is actually to connect up our cameras. So now that there's fiber everywhere, why don't we overlay it with a camera network? And knowing the challenges that the security providers had in terms of managing, you know, infrastructure and connectivity and configuration, having the balance sheet to put up the infrastructure and the network, we just said, why don't we put up a common platform? And then we'll work with all the different security companies in enabling and sending the feeds to them and the alerts so that they can then do what we achieved in Dunkeld, you know, 10 years ago. And that was really where the whole concept and the philosophy was born, with which, you know, led us into saying that if each of the security companies are to do it in isolation, it doesn't really solve the picture, because if you don't have, you know, this network effect of cameras, you don't have Parkview cameras talking to Parkhurst cameras, talking to Houghton cameras, talking to Saxonwold, well, the same guys are going to be, you know, attacking Parkhurst, it would be in Parkview. And you don't actually know the same modus operandi, the same vehicles, the same people. If it's all one common platform, an incident happens in Parkview, well, as soon as those guys leave Parkview, they have to go through all the different other neighborhoods. It triggers the alert to all the different security companies, and you can intercept the guys and arrest them. And, you know, so, like, you've got this whole collab now pulling in the same direction.
And tell me, have you seen a spike in crime as we've exited the hard lockdown into subsequent level 3 and sort of 3A light, whatever you want to call it, that we're in now?
Yeah, so as you went from level 5 down to level 4, we saw an increase, and then a massive increase from level 4 to level 3. And, you know, where we're sitting today is where we were before any lockdown, and crime is, you know, increasing rapidly in terms of just the economic impact of what's happening in our country. And the more people under pressure, which just means to more, you know, more crime taking place.
And the business model for you, do you then subcontract with the security companies? How does the business model work?
So the model for us is that, you know, the security companies pay us a fee per camera per month. So we would look at who the security company is, we'll vet them, we'll see, you know, make them a responsible party, they sign the terms and conditions. You know, we follow the POPI Act very stringently. But the business model is a rate per camera, to the security companies, who then monetize it onto the residents in those areas, or they absorb it as a cost of their solution.
And you mentioned data privacy and POPI. I think these days we're all concerned about data privacy and the emergence of technologies like facial recognition. And we hear all kinds of stories in China in particular. What safeguards does Vumacam take? And do you actually employ that kind of facial recognition technology? I remember a hullabaloo about this towards the back end of last year. Just remind us exactly how you approach privacy.
So privacy for us, and you know, since 2017, has been top priority. What we don't use any facial recognition software. So you know, we've seen that. Firstly, we don't think it's at a level where it's usable, you know, yet. But as the way that we designed our solution, you have to have a specific kind of camera with the right resolutions to utilize that technology, and we haven't, you know, adopted that approach. We more look at situational awareness. And we've got different triggers of alerts that come through. So either an alert from a stolen vehicle that's been on a SAP database that then triggers onto our system and then gets sent to the security companies, or the guys use a behavioral analytics that learns the pixels of the cameras and reports on exceptions. So there's no, you know, there's no analytic bias or anything that takes place in the cameras. It's really to say, look at what's happening on this camera. Something unusual is happening over here. Let me raise an alert. That then goes to the security company operator, who then decides if they're going to send out a vehicle or not to investigate further. So we don't have any personal information. We can't say your number plate is, you know, linked to your name, to your ID number. Or we can't say this person is walking in the street, is this guy's name. We don't have any personal information. All we're looking at is if there's a stolen vehicle that comes in, to get a reaction vehicle there to intercept it. Or alternatively, someone's being robbed or running or something's happening, and send out a vehicle to go and investigate. As I said before, vehicles can't be everywhere at the same time. So with the cameras, we can alert you to be at the right point so that you can then, you know, give a dedicated, you know, security solution.
I heard of a story recently where you used that that license plate recognition to apprehend a stolen vehicle that was nicked in the CBD, and you eventually arrested the suspects on William Nicol Drive, north of Joburg. So it just shows you the power of the technology. And Ricky, we've seen a siloed approach to the way we police and keep our suburbs safe. We've got the security companies, the private security companies. They tend to work even as silos themselves. But then you've got the police not really working hand in glove with the private security companies either. How are you trying to bring all of these various operators together to help provide a more collaborative approach to tackling crime?
So two things. On the 7th of of June, exactly when that incident did take place, was an unbelievable day for me, because, you know, when we set out to do this business, we said, imagine it worked like this, that you could have an alert in one area and a different security company would affect the rest later that day in a different area, which is exactly the concept of what we're trying to do. So it's always, you can put these things onto paper, you know, fancy PowerPoint presentations. But when it plays out in reality, you know, it's really an amazing thing to watch. And, you know, it was a very proud day for me. Secondly, where we see ourselves is we're just a platform. So we've got the infrastructure to connect, or host it, do all the, you know, the integral and heavy lifting for us. And then we then work with all the different security companies. But at the same time, we've then put an instance of our solution against crime. So any alert that comes through, SAPs get the same alert, as well as all the different, you know, security companies. And we really see ourselves as a glue that pulls the private security companies to work together, plus SAPs, plus JMPD, and actually everyone's now working on that same platform. And that becomes, like, really powerful, because with information you can do, you know, things that, you know, affecting that arrest, you know, that played out the other day.
Amazing thing to see a dream, as you say, Ricky, and a vision come to fruition in such a profound manner, where the four suspects were apprehended and the car returned as well. Now, it hasn't all been plain sailing. As I said, there are issues around privacy. There is a spat with Right to Know. But more importantly, there seems to have now been an issue with the Joburg Roads Agency. And you've approached the courts, I see, with an urgent application to declare the JRA's decision to suspend aerial and CCTV wayleave applications unlawful and invalid and set aside. Why has the JRA suspended these wayleave applications?
So the challenge, you know, with the JRA, and the JRA is just, you know, their role is to maintain a telecom cable or, another cable, whatever the case is. So they're the custodians of the road reserve. What we're saying is there's bylaws that has been published via the JRA. We've met those bylaws. We're then saying we've got communities and people, you know, with the increase in crime that's requesting our services, and we cannot put out extra security to make the guards safer because we aren't, you know, there hasn't, the wayleaves aren't forthcoming. So all the poles and all the infrastructure that's been put out has always been gone through the process, and we've been issued our wayleaves. And then on the 9th of July, we got a letter saying that it's suspended. We're trying to now ascertain what is that reason and, you know, why the guys aren't giving us our things. We have approached them to try and meet and then to get, you know, get it set amicably. And I think that the challenge is when we do have these activist groups and you've got the Right to Knows and the guys that are, you know, some guys that we've been talking to, and we've actually invited them to say, come look at the system, come see how it works. But for some reason, they've got, you know, a clear agenda and, you know, don't want to see cameras, you know, going up for whatever reason it may be. And the JRA now sits in a position where you're saying, well, you know, we've got a complaint, you know, there's a bit of noise in the system. But when you go back into the communities and the people that we are, you see 96% of the people that vote on our things are all in favor of cameras. And when we can explain to people how it actually works and through the alerts, and actually 99% of the footage actually just gets flushed through the system, and we don't even know who you are, and we can never actually match, you know, you to an identity or, you know, to your own specific name or whatever the case might be. We're just saying, guys, we need to protect these communities who are crying out to us to put our cameras into their areas, and we can't fulfill those requirements. So if you aren't going to give us a reason and you aren't going to assist with the wayleave, well, then we must apply to the courts and the courts must decide, you know, knowing that you've previously given and we've managed all the bylaws and ticked all the boxes.
I'm disappointed to hear that Right to Know haven't taken you up on your offer to show them around to allay some of their concerns. Ricky, we'll certainly be following up with them on that. What are your expansion plans now? You've obviously proven the concept, apart from this pushback that we're seeing, it's a system that is clearly effective. What sort of growth plans do you have from here?
So the first thing is that we wanted to prove that concept around, you know, the network effect and getting the density so that you can, you know, you can prove these things. Once we still get out that density effect, you know, we still want to perfect the technology in terms of notifying people if your number plate's being cloned, because we can tell you that a car's been seen in one area and another area at the same point in time. You know, we also want to avoid the case where people are getting pulled over because the car is being used in a robbery, but it's actually the rightful owner. So, you know, we've still got quite a lot of the technology and things to assist with residents and things, but we've got expansion plans that we want to go into the city of Tshwane, to Ekurhuleni, to Mahali, to Cape Town, and to Durban. And really your major metropolitan areas where we can go and you've got the right density and you've got security offtake that are calling for this. And we've got guys that are busy putting up their own infrastructure and go out on the route because, you know, cameras are coming. You know, people have to put in cameras to utilize into the technology, as I said, to fight against crime. But we want to say, like, there's a lot that we've learned. We can do it on a coordinated fashion. We can give it to the, you know, cheaper to the security company than they can do it themselves. But we have to prove the concept, which we've now done. And we want to look at expanding into those cities.
Ricky Crook, CEO of Vumacam, with the story behind the eyes in the suburbs looking to bring down runaway crime.